The World Energy Congress begins tomorrow in Rotterdam. It's an event that dates all the way back to 1924. And in 2024, around 5,000 delegates and up to 70 ministers and 250 C-suite executives will be appearing at what is billed as the world's most prestigious and influential event driving energy transitions. Today on Sunday Extra, we're joined by two First Nations women who are speaking about clean energy security for First Nations communities at the Congress. Karina Nolan is Executive Director of Original Power and co-chair of the First Nations Clean Energy Network in Australia. And Karina is a descendant of the Yorta Yorta people and in 2023 was the Australian Geographics Conservationist of the Year. Welcome, Karina.
Hello.
And we're also joined by Melina Labucan-Massimo, who is Lubicon Cree from Northern Alberta in Canada and the founder and executive director of Sacred Earth Solar. Welcome to you also, Melina.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I wanted to ask you both first about the World Energy Congress. It looks like a grand event full of traditional industry figures and governments. How do you feel about bringing the agenda of First Nations clean energy to an event like this, Melina?
Well, I think it's incredibly important, especially at this point in time in history. The World Energy Council has been around for 100 years, like you said, and this is some of the first Indigenous leaders speaking at the Congress. So I think it's prime time and very important, especially as the energy transition is, you know, being accelerated, especially in countries where I'm from in so-called Canada. So I think it's quite important to bring these stories of energy transition to the forefront.
The issues monitor paper for the World Energy Congress says that bottom-up engagement is weaker than needed. Would you agree with that, Karina Nolan?
Well, I think one of the things that we're seeing is that our communities haven't been centred nearly enough in this transition, and this is a moment to do it differently, which is why I'm so excited to actually be part of the Congress. But I think it's more than just bottom-up. I think we're talking about really genuine engagement and consent of First Nations communities right around the world. And when that's done well, the projects actually look considerably different. They can benefit communities, they can be sustainable for generations to come.
And Karina, we don't need to get Melina to blow her own trumpet because I understand that the work of Canada has actually been something of an inspiration for what you are trying to achieve in Australia. Is that right?
Absolutely. And Sister Melina came over many, many years ago and talked to communities about what it could look like at a conference actually in Melbourne. And then from them and introduced us to Indigenous clean energy. And they've actually been partners of ours, like a sister organisation, all the way through this journey. We did some early webinars where we sort of asked for advice and said, is there some secret ingredients? How did you do it? So Canada, so-called Canada, is, you know, 10 years ahead of us. So I think it's been really key for us in the lessons. Yeah.
Yeah, the transformation that you've been able to achieve so far in Canada is really extraordinary, Melina. Could you sort of set the scene for us, tell us a little bit about where you come from and some of the battles that you had to undertake, but then also the progress and the wins that you've had since then?
Sure. I come from an impacted community that has been impacted by oil, gas, tar sands, fracking and logging since I was born. So as you can imagine, kind of being surrounded by the extractivism of fossil fuels. And so from an early age, really understood that there needed to be more solutions being in place. And I started out as a climate energy campaigner, campaigning internationally as well as across the country. And then we had a massive oil spill back home. And I thought, I can talk till I'm blue in the face about these issues, but if I don't start building the future that I want to see, then I'm not going to be better off, and neither is my community or any of the Indigenous communities that I work with. So what I did from there was went back to finish my master's degree and started to implement renewable energy, first in my community as a 20.8 kilowatt system that is a solar power to the grid, and it powers our health center. And then from there, started to build other renewable energy projects in the country. And, you know, currently what we see right now is that we have close to 3,000 Indigenous-led projects from small to medium size, and then also up to 300 large-scale revenue-generating projects that have Indigenous participation and Indigenous ownership. So I think, you know, what we see is something where many communities have taken this up, because what we've seen is an imposition of foreign and, you know, external fossil fuel extraction in the past. And what renewable energy is bringing to Indigenous communities is an energy sovereignty and energy security that we have not yet seen. And so that's why we see such an uptake, is because it really allows Indigenous communities to lead the way out of the climate crisis, ideally, and be more resilient in the face of the climate crisis.
It sounds like a really profound transformation. Melina, have you got to the stage where, whether it's particular communities or generally, you can say that First Nations peoples in your country do actually have energy security and sovereignty now?
Well, you know, we have hundreds and hundreds of Indigenous communities across the country, as well as Inuit and Métis communities. So, but I would say that there is a push for it, and we do see more Indigenous-led projects and more Indigenous-led climate organizations pushing for better policy and more inclusive policy and more equitable policy, which is really what we need to see in terms of dealing with the various levels of government. So we have to deal with provincial governments and then federal policy. So that definitely makes those interactions between how we connect to grid, how we deal with utilities, does make it for a complicated space.
Karina, it sounds like dealing with three levels of government is certainly something that First Nations people in Australia and Canada have in common. Melina's definitely set the scene there with the really impressive achievements that have happened in Canada. Could you give us your sense of, I mean, you've said it's a decade behind in Australia. Where are things in terms of Indigenous communities and energy and renewable energy, energy security in Australia at the moment?
Some of the issues are really similar. And one of the reasons we set up the First Nations Clean Energy Network a couple of years ago was to deal with all of the issues. So to think about energy security at a time when also the government is proposing large-scale export projects to export power right past some of the communities that need it the most. So what we've been doing is actually working on a kind of a First Nations clean energy strategy alongside the federal government. You know, we went round and round tables with communities right around the country. And what's been really clear to us is there's three areas of work, and what that one around energy security is really key to people. And so making sure that actually people can live on country, we're moving people off diesel. We're looking at what the policy barriers are to people putting rooftop solar on. In Australia, there's 3 million households that have rooftop solar. But we can't tell you how many of those are First Nations households. We can certainly tell you there's not very many. And so we've been working closely with different jurisdictions to understand what are the barriers to that. It's not technical and it's not even necessarily financial, although, of course, there's some capital costs involved. But actually, a lot of that is really about who owns the houses, the state of the houses, working with communities and different, you know, native title arrangements. All those things can be overcome. And the other two significant areas of work are around this sort of, you know, engagement and consent, that if communities don't genuinely consent to projects, they won't be done well, they won't be done in the right place. But for people to do that, there needs to be proper capacity, resourcing of traditional owner entities to really engage. And the third piece of work for our traditional owners to be resourced to actually be the owners. And as Melina talked about, the hundreds of First Nations, either fully owned or joint venture projects in so-called Canada. In Australia, we have 14 and none of those are actually built yet. So we don't actually have one First Nations owned built project in Australia. So we've got a long way to go.
Yes, indeed. At the same time, the First Nations Clean Energy Network tracker does keep track of all those projects, and it looks like there are five that are at feasibility stage, although, as you said, not yet operational. Could you just give us a sense of what sort of projects are coming through in this space?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because some people want to own their own and generate their own power, but also some people expect the government or others to provide that as a basic service. So I think we're trying to work with communities to go, well, actually, do you want to generate your own power and what does that look like in terms of income and then lower energy prices? So some of those projects look like microgrids or mini microgrids servicing a community of, say, 1,500. Some people are looking at economic development opportunities that then might actually decarbonise really large-scale mines. So that's really looking about kind of long-term economic development where people have actually experienced the impacts of mining, you know, not in a negative way that's been done to them. And this is a moment to sort of turn that around and say, what if we actually did it really differently and didn't repeat the mistakes of the extractive industry of the past? And then there's some local household projects about installing solar on rental properties. There's a project in Mullinger at the moment that's, you know, a community of around 80 that's just developing a kind of microgrid, 100 kilowatt sort of system that supports that community that gets flooded and cut off every year. It's grid connected, but often has to rely on diesel backup, and it just has extraordinarily high energy bills. So there's a whole range of them. There's also a number of export projects. People are looking at hydrogen in partnership with large-scale export commercial projects as well. So there's a full range underway.
We were hearing there from Karina Nolan, Executive Director of Original Power and co-chair of the First Nations Clean Energy Network in Australia. I'll come back to you now, Melina Labukan-Massimo. One of the many things you do is present a television documentary, Power to the People, that explores the renewable energy revolution empowering Indigenous communities. Some amazing projects that you profile in that program. I wonder if you could just pick out a couple to give us a sense of the sorts of things that have been achieved.
Sure. Yeah. We went to 26 locations and we profiled 14 Indigenous communities and also toured solar panel manufacturing companies as well as researchers across the country. So we were able to speak to communities like Gull Bay First Nation, which has their own microgrid, which is offsetting diesel power with solar. Also, Taiku River Tlingit Nation, where they've replaced 100% of diesel. They actually have a run of the river system and a geo exchange system that they've implemented. And also a community, Six Nations, which has over 18 projects currently standing from large scale wind and solar, where they've been able to really see a great deal of reinvestment back into communities and buying really important resources like fire trucks, where, you know, when a community is far from a fire station, you know, myself included, we've had family members die in household fires because of that. So we can see just such a vast array. We've also large-scale wind from 47 wind turbines in Listigush and in a Mi'kmaq, three Mi'kmaq communities that joined together to build a wind farm. And so we'll see projects like that generating in the next 20 years over $200 million for the communities, where it can go back into, you know, social services and to language revitalization, into education and training. So it was amazing to be able to see all of these projects, small scale biomass as well, and also food security projects. So like the implementation of food forests and bees and different food security mechanisms that communities are implementing to be resilient in the face of the climate crisis, as well as eco-housing to be able to build culturally relevant and above standard in terms of building eco-housing. So it was just such a tremendous display, and people could actually access it. And it's 13 episodes, just jam-packed of information around the climate crisis and renewable energy and climate solutions. So,
yes, indeed. And you could do worse than starting at powertothepeople.tv, which is the homepage of the program. It's been great speaking with both of you. I hope you have a great time at the World Energy Congress, and we'll look forward to hearing about more successful projects in both parts of the world that you are clearly having such a significant input in. Karina Nolan, thank you so much for speaking with us on RN.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thanks also to you, Melina Labukan-Massimo.
Thank you so much for having me.
Karina Nolan is Executive Director of Original Power and co-chair of the First Nations Clean Energy Network in Australia. And the network is hosting the First Nations Clean Energy Symposium in Adelaide on 8 and 9 May, at which both Karina and Melina Labukan-Massimo, our other guest, founder and executive director of Sacred Earth Solar, will be appearing, as they both will, at the World Energy Congress in Rotterdam, which runs until 25 April.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.